March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
It just didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.
William Warrick, good to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jerry? It's been a while.
This is the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, so it's a good time to have you back with us.
Yep. 12 years. 12 years this Friday the 13th, which for those of you who follow occult studies is a propitious day.
Well, if it had been Friday the 13th, wow, I had not thought of that before.
No, I mean if it was Friday the 13th, that would have been. A humdinger. Nope. It was actually. Let me think. 14th was the day that I got fired, so that was Friday. That would have been the 13th. So it would have been.
Are you talking about getting fired because you saw a UFO and reported it?
Yeah. Yeah. I got fired on March 14th, which was 2 days after I saw the UFO, and that was the day after the Phoenix Lights.
William, I think it'd be a good idea to tell the listeners a little bit more about this. I mean, you're getting fired because you saw a UFO.
Well, back in 1997, I was working my way through college, working for a national plumbing company, and I was out on call, looking at a job, and I went out to my service vehicle to retrieve a business card, and on the way back in, that's when I saw the UFO. And about 15 minutes later, after I went back into the house and told the guy what I saw, went back out to the truck, got on my radio, and tried to find out if any other technicians in the area had seen anything. And that's basically it.
So you were kind of a victim of being a whistleblower, I guess.
That was in Norfolk, and that was all that I said about it. It was very brief. I mean, literally what I just said was what I said on the radio. I called in sick the next morning. I was a little freaked out, as you probably can imagine. That was the morning of March 13th, and then on March 14th, I called in sick again for totally different reasons. My boss showed up at my doorstep at like 9 o'clock in the morning, told me I was fired, took my truck away, my van, my tools, everything.
What did you see that night? I mean, the UFO. Was it worth getting fired?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that it wasn't voluntary. You know, it was... I didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on me.
Where exactly was this UFO?
Well, the craft that I saw was approximately 600 feet wide. It could have been as low as 300 feet wide, but I would say that it most likely between 400 and 600 feet wide from tip to tip. It was not a flying wing. It was not a B-2 stealth bomber. It was not a blimp. I'm familiar with all types of aircraft. I was a certified senior member of the Civil Air Patrol, Taunton Air Squadron, 1990-1992. My job was to be the spotter. I memorized just about every aircraft in the world, military and civilian, in Jane's Encyclopedia when I was 16. I have kept, for the most part, up to date with that. I did go to school for mechanical engineering. I did want to become an aeronautical engineering major, and I was very familiar with all flight principles. And what I saw just defies all of that. It throws everything out the window. Whether it was human or alien, and that's up for debate, was definitely an anti-gravity craft or some type of craft that nullified the effects of gravity due to the enormous increases in acceleration and deceleration.
Now, you've brought up Edgar Cayce with us before. You think he's pretty important in all of the scheme of things. And the Philadelphia experiment took place right about where you saw the UFO, huh?
Well, at that particular time, I was in a residential neighborhood which is situated and surrounded by a series of naval bases, which is basically called Norfolk Naval Base, but which is actually a series of different naval bases that are kind of all connected. So, in essence, we were surrounded by military infrastructure. And in the Norfolk, Virginia area. Interestingly enough, when I did more research about this particular geographical area, I found that this was also the area where the famed Philadelphia experiment allegedly took place.
Now, I know you're in the process of updating your website. I hope you put some stuff up there.
Yes.
I mean about Edgar Cayce and your research.
Yep. In fact, one of the most interesting connections that I was able to make was that Edgar Cayce, who was the renowned psychic that lived in the 1920s and died in 1945, actually located his hospital for healing people in Virginia Beach, and that particular latitude, for some reason, Bruce Cathy wrote a book about it called Harmonic Conquest of Space, which you can get, which you can still get your hands on. But for some reason, at that particular latitude, these experiments in space and time appear to be able to be conducted. We are going to have a new launching of UFOEyewitness.com, which is going to have all of the information that was going to be published in my books is going to be published on the web for free, basically. Everyone will be able to have access to that over the next few coming months as we upload stuff to the web. Basically, I spent a lot of time trying to find book publishers who are willing to do the books, and found that, you know, the percentage you get on that, for those of you who don't know anything about book publishing, the author might make 3% of list price, which is, you know, nothing.
So much for book publishing, but you do have a DVD out. How's that doing?
We just won an award for the best investigative documentary from the New York Independent International Film Festival. Very happy about that, and you know, we're just looking forward to making sure that people get this DVD and see the information that's in it, look at the evidence that's presented, and really make your own decision. We don't try to tell people what to think. We just try to present you with as much evidence as possible so that you can see what's really out there. And certainly the DVD is the only way to get that, because the mainstream media is just not covering it.
And you can order that on your website?
Absolutely. You can order it from UFOEyewitness.com. That's www.UFOEyewitness.com. And there's also a 800 number that you can call, 1-877. This is a toll-free call, by the way. 1-877-345-6222. Again, that's 1-877-345-6222.
And the price? $19.95, right?
So couple of coffees at Starbucks, basically.
Now, this documentary, this DVD, is about the Phoenix Lights?
All of the incidents related to the Phoenix Lights. A lot of people get focused on...
Now, we've done several previous shows with you, William Warwick, and I would suggest, in fact, I urge people to go over and listen to those shows. They can find that on your page right here on our site. We also have an associated link here. Basically, as I understand it, and as I remember our other interviews, you say there were a lot of things happening there in Virginia at the same time the Phoenix Lights appeared in Arizona.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, definitely in the previous shows we got into tons of detail about the various events that happened not only in Phoenix, but coincidentally also here in Norfolk, Virginia. I mean, you had plane crashes, you had you have an incident with Governor Clinton on the evening of March 13th, which really still has not been explained. I mean, there are just so many different events that happened within a very small period of time, most of them within a couple of hours of each other, certainly within double-digit hours of each other in terms of all of the events beginning to unfold. And I don't mean that just in terms of the Phoenix Lights or Norfolk Gets in particular, but on an international level. There are events that happened in Brazil in January. There were events that happened in St. Petersburg, Russia, in February of 1997. So there were a lot of huge...
Can you refresh my mind about St. Petersburg and that incident? I mean, was it a huge craft? I think it was. Boomerang? Triangle?
You know, the reports are a little bit varied, but from what I understand, most of them were very similar to the types of reports that we got out of Phoenix and out of Norfolk, which were, you know, basically large triangular form or boomerang form craft. And we must remember that it's quite possible that, say, if you had three lights in the sky, you would automatically... Most people would automatically connect those three points and call it a triangle, when in fact it could be a boomerang-shaped object like the craft that I saw. So, definitely around the world at that particular time, there seemed to be just this huge, unprecedented influx of UFO incursions all in every country that you can imagine. with no seemingly clear indication as to where that might be coming from or who might be behind it, if it was human in nature, and if it was human in nature, what would be the purpose of it? Is it some kind of psychological operation that the government is doing to see what people's reaction to it would be? There are just so many unanswered questions to all these events that we really need to get to the bottom of it.
William Warwick, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we are going to talk to you about really what your conclusions are, if you've reached any after 12 years, about the Phoenix Lights and these other incidents around the world, all happening about the same time. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back with our guest, William Warwick, and our subject, among other things, of course, the Phoenix Lights. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Marv.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
no other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon now. $85 a person. Yeah.
Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at MarvelousMarv.com. The Phoenix Lights incident happened 12 years ago. Wow, it just does not seem like it's been that long. William Warwick is our guest. He's on the line from his home in Norfolk, Virginia. William, when we went to the break, we were talking about similar incidents happening around the world, and some of them at exactly the same time that the Phoenix Lights was occurring in Arizona. Now, I know you have had a conference. You produced a documentary on this subject, and you've done lots of research on the Phoenix Lights. So let's start off this portion with the answer to the question, what do you make of all of this? I mean, have you come to a conclusion about the Phoenix Lights at all?
Yes, actually I have, and it's only been really in the past 6 or 8 months. After I went to the X conference with Stephen Bassett and met all those incredible other researchers there last year, I really began to think about why it was that after 60 years we still have America, at least, still hasn't tackled the UFO question. And the more research that I did as to why, the real reasons why this information hasn't been brought out, has to do with the fact that for 60-odd years, since roughly 1947, our government has really had a government within a government, which many have called the secret government, which has been really controlling how the progress of our country has taken place and what direction it has gone. And what I mean by that is that if we assume that something really did happen in Roswell in 1947 and that some sort of alien crash vehicle event occurred, then that would certainly have sent shockwaves throughout the military and intelligence and government governmental bodies to the point that they would have formed what many ufologists have called, the Majestic 12 or some sort of oversight board. And along with that oversight board, they would have been given an unlimited national security capacity to basically acquire whatever they needed to do, basically whatever they wanted to do. And with that carte blanche credit card to buy whatever they want and sell whatever they want, so to speak, and make whatever they want, they also had the national security what's the word I'm looking for? The national
Say apparatus.
To go along with it. And so, I mean, that's a pretty dangerous combination to have in any society, in any government organization, or any free society, let's put it that way. Now, if it's a dictatorship, if we're talking about Stalin or Hitler or something like that, then that's an excellent system to run your government and your people. But obviously, in America, that's not so good, because history has shown that Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, having said all that, if we fast forward 60 years into the future, and you listen to the former comptroller of the United States, who just retired from his position before the election, he said that our actual deficit is between 50 and 55 trillion dollars, and that all of the candidates know about it, but they don't want to talk about it because they're afraid it's going to send us into an even more deeper recession. Now, the question that I have, Jerry, is if the official known documented so-called deficit is around $11 trillion, then where is the other 40-odd trillion dollars of our deficit? First of all, where has it gone to? And second of all, where is that money that went to that, where did it come from?
Now, those are all good questions. But the question is, do you have answers, Bill?
Well, I mean, if we start from the premise that that the United States government formed a secret group, a coalition of military-industrial complexes, which we'll just call it that because that's the most accurate definition of it, got together and formed a secret society, so to speak, a secret group of individuals. Who would oversee the back engineering or the re-engineering of anti-gravity craft, whether that be, human-made craft from the Nazis or the Japanese, etc., or whether that's a true extraterrestrial vehicle, is probably not that important. But the point would be that from that point on, say around circa 1947, that a significant, I would say more than significant, amount of the gross domestic product of our country has been dedicated to things that and items that can never be sold. You know, you can't sell anti-gravity craft to anyone. That can never be revealed and because of the technology involved, which goes along with the first reason. And then the third thing is, how do you explain how you paid for it? So we really have a triple whammy of a situation where the government, or I should say the people that are in control of these technologies, or I should say the companies that are in control of these technologies, Boeing, Aerospace, you know their names, Lockheed, Bechtel, some of the more obscure, EG&G, that's a big one, SAIC, there's another one. These companies are obviously dealing with anti-gravity technology, but the question is, if all of these programs are black budgets and they're not appropriated legally by the United States Senate, the question that I have is, where is that money coming from? There are really only a couple of revenue streams in the whole world that you can get tax-free that are very lucrative. And that don't require a lot of people asking questions. Well, one of those things is military arms and weapons, right? And drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the first time that anyone that has put together the, for instance, Air America back in the Vietnam era, where the CIA was dealing with getting drugs from South America, and of course selling those drugs here right here in America and abroad. You've got the case of back in the 80s with the CIA selling crack to the the poor black people in LA. These aren't conspiratorial cases. These are actual historical documented facts.
You know, here at the Jerry Pippen Show, we're in the beginning stages of a series in development about drug money and our secret black operations, government operations, off-budget stuff, and actually even protection of the pharmaceutical companies by the government. It's all intertwined, and it's centered around this huge amount of money that's out there that everybody's getting, receiving from illegal drugs. Now, I'm not talking about just the selling of it, but I'm talking about the enforcement aspect, the war on drugs itself. It's all a huge moneymaker.
Well, one of the most important things that tells you what's going on in terms of how do I explain this? The first state act of George Bush Jr. when he became president, the first thing he did, the first official state act that he did, was he went to Columbia and he gave the president of Colombia $4 billion, with the B, $4 billion to quote unquote fight drugs. Now, I mean, to me, that tells me that looks like a payment. I'm sorry. I mean, you could say that it's used to help fund, you know, the secret police there in Colombia, but I mean, $4 billion. I mean, for $4 billion, my God, does the whole Special Forces Command have $4 billion? The whole Special Forces Command of America, do they get $4 billion a year in their budget to play with? I mean, it's just, it's an insane amount of money, for reasons that I think are highly suspicious. In fact, if you recall, what was it, Operation Something Fury, when George Bush Sr. sent the Special Forces in to get Noriega.
Yes.
Well, one of the scuttlebutts of that was that apparently all of the drug people put all of their money in Noriega's banks in Panama, because that's just what you did. Well, supposedly Bush had a bunch of his money in there, and when Noriega took over the banks, he took over all the drug dealers' money, and of course Bush went down to straighten it all out and find out where the money was. Operation Something Fury, and that was back in 1989. So certainly it seems as though there is a class within a class here in America, or there was a class within a class. Hopefully with the new president some things will change, but that felt that they had, you know, their own special privileges to do whatever they want, whenever they wanted, to whomever they want, and have been getting away with it for 60 years. And I think that the UFO situation is what gave them that power to begin with, and what is now ruining this country. Because if you think that $40 trillion has been spent on these programs over the past 60 years, and you think about where that money came from, I guarantee you half of it came from drugs. Now, they could use that justification on a higher level if they were to go to, you know, Nebraska senators or whatever, you know, the Midwestern Truman types, right, and say, listen, you know, we have to sell these drugs, because if we don't sell these drugs, then we don't have any money to continue the UFO effort, and if we don't continue the UFO effort, then the aliens will take over the world. And so you have this huge house of cards built on a house of lies, which is now beginning to come crumbling down, and I think that the American people need to demand from their government accountability and an answer to the UFO question, because I really and truly feel in my heart of hearts that what I've heard from other people who have been doing this a lot longer than I have. I'm only 37. I've only really been doing this for 10 or 12 years. You know, that for instance, Bill Cooper, if you remember William Milton Cooper.
Sure.
He said that our country spends about $1 trillion a year, and he said this back in the 80s, on these secret black government projects. Well, you know, if he's right, and you do about $1 trillion a year since 1947, well, guess what? You come up with about $55 trillion. So when I did that in my head, and I realized when I connected A, B, C, D, E, and F, I said, my God, could this be the reason why we are in the financial debacle that we are in today? Because not only is it the money, Jerry, you know, it's not just the fact that elements of our government would be and are, you know, unquestionably involved in drug smuggling and selling it to our children, right? It's not just that, but it's the fact that so much technology that could be environmentally friendly technology is being suppressed. And so much talent on a national collegiate level is being sucked away from programs that could be benefiting our country right now and being put into these black programs. I mean, it's killing us. It's literally, I never thought in a million years that I would come to the point where I would say that the UFO cause is meeting all of the other causes that we should be fighting for, you know, here in America and on Earth as human beings. You know what I mean? I mean, I just find it...
You know, I think the major problem we have with official U.S. government disclosure of UFOs will be the money. We've spent a lot of money back engineering all of this, and most of it came from Uncle Sam, given in the form of secret, you know, contributions to corporations. I'm talking to military industrial complex corporations to develop these things, like maybe even the computer or the microchip, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And these companies have the patents, and they've been making lots of money. And officially, if it were acknowledged, if they got these products by back engineering and financial help and backing from the U.S. government, then the lawyers would be out there filing class action suits on behalf of the taxpayers, as well as they should, and there would be a lot of money they would have to come up with to rebate to the American public, to the taxpayers. I can see how this would be a whole new can of worms for the Black Hawk boys. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I don't, yeah. That would be great. I mean, that's what I would absolutely have to agree with. That there's been one completely objective viewpoint that we can definitely show empirically is just by measuring the number of mainstream news stories that are being printed or shown on television about UFOs and UFO sightings. PRG, Paradigm Research Group, has a great website if you want to check it out. UFO reports that have occurred since roughly around 1996, 1997, right around the time of the Phoenix Lights. And the amazing thing is that in the, you know, 1997 there were like 12 reports, and in 1998 it was 15, and then 20, and the next year it was 30, and the next year it was 60. And I mean, I think it's up to about 250 a year now, mainstream. So clearly, the whole, not just the public's interest in it, but also the mainstream's coverage of it, which is going to increase the public's interest of it, has been growing exponentially. So I would agree. I think we are heading towards that point, but I still think that, you know, there is like a critical, we're at a critical junction right here, in the sense that the only time that real change happens, when you look through history, is when people are really dissatisfied.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Bill, about things, you know, getting bad before they get good. I know in the financial crisis, I just did a show on banking, and the prevalent theory around is that it had to get really bad, out of control, before anything would be done to correct it. So maybe the UFO thing will straighten itself up, you think?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes things have to fall apart and break down before you can get your hands in there and fix it. And so I really think that we have a tremendous opportunity here, especially in this upcoming year, you know, this from here on out, from basically the Phoenix Lights on. And I think anyone involved, and you call it a call to arms or whatever you want to call it, and of course you've been instrumental in that, Jerry, we need to put together a political action committee. Stephen Bassett from PRG is a lobbyist by trade, and, you know, we need that. We need to have someone, a group in Washington that represents everyone's view about UFOs, whether they be skeptical or, you know, I'm an adoptee, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. What I want is government accountability. What America needs to have is government accountability. And if we don't get it soon, if we don't do it in the next year, I think we're going to lose a tremendous opportunity to make that happen. And if we don't make that happen, I mean, there are a whole series of Orwellian consequences of us not dealing with this right here. And
consequences? Right. What are we talking about, consequences here, Bill? What consequences?
Some of them, well, the best layout that I have seen so far is by Grant Cameron. He beat me to the punch. He listed, and you can get this on his website, I think it's presidentialufos.com. Just look up Grant Cameron, you'll find him. And he listed 64 potential legitimate logical reasons why the UFO reality has not been brought out by the government. In other words, why disclosure hasn't happened yet. So the issue is so complex on so many levels that that there are so many reasons for not bringing it out, that it really does require, you know, something like what we're experiencing now in America, you know, this huge fallout all around the world and a questioning of our ideals and a questioning of our everything. There's a tremendous opportunity to put this secrecy to bed and to give not just America but the whole human race a new direction. Because if we believe in this capitalist system, in this free market economy system, okay, and I do, then you have to have what's called an expanding economy. You have to have, you know, X amount of births per year and X amount of births deaths per year, you know, 5% growth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I mean, there is a limit to what the Earth can sustain. So at some point, we've got to go into space. I think it's our destiny. I think that's where we came from. I think that's where we will return. And if we can focus our attention on that, the whole human race, like we did with the space race, and we could do it with going back to the moon, we could do it with going back to Mars. I mean, a Mars mission is estimated to cost $40 billion. I mean, only $40 billion? We just gave AIG $800 billion. What did we get for that? We got nothing.
Good point.
You know, $40 billion, and everyone cries about it. But here again, the reason why we don't have a moon base on the moon, and the reason why we don't have a Mars base, is because the secret black government projects don't want anyone to be in their territory. That's their you know, that's all their stuff. And so, you know, once again, it's not just a matter of our American economy. It's not just a matter of our civil liberties. It's a matter of the evolution of the human race that's at stake. It really, really is.
William Warrick is our guest, and we'll get back to the Phoenix Lights when we come back after this break. You know, there's still some mysteries about this incident, even 12 years later, and I want to discuss those with you, William, so don't go away. We'll be back, folks.
Hello, I'm Anthony Miles, director of the award-winning motion picture, Fast Walkers, They Are Here. It's my pleasure to introduce you to our new series of explosive and revealing one-on-one interviews entitled Fast Walkers, Open Files. Without question, the biggest challenge of making the original Fast Walkers motion picture was the process of selection of the material that I was able to include, realizing the limitations that were imposed by a motion picture time track of approximately 90 minutes. The selection process was brutal. Our interviews totaled over 50 in number, and many were over an hour in length. Most were filled with startling and important information, much of which has never before been told. Now, by popular demand, all of that has changed with the Fast Walkers Open Files series. And be sure to check the FastWalkers.com website on a regular basis for the upcoming release of additional Fast Walkers Open Files volumes, and to get your copy of the Fast Walkers motion picture.